You're listening to Wire 106 on DS 106 Radio.
Okay, you like that? Pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll do a quick introduction of everybody. I'm Jim Groom. This is Wire 106, discussion of episode 4, season 2. Melinda?
I'm Melinda Albrecht. I work at UMW, and I'm also taking this class.
Great. Allison.
I'm Allison Thoet. I'm a senior, and this is the last class in my journalism major.
Nice. And Sydney? Sid might have to drop out and do this again.
I'm Sid. I'm a senior at Mary Washington, and I'm a sociology and education major.
Perfect. And Paul?
I'm Paul. I'm a librarian at the University of Pittsburgh at Johnstown.
Awesome. And we're actually going to be talking about Wire season 4, season 2, episode 4. And this is the episode, what's it called again? What's this episode? I know the last one was Hot Shots. What's tonight's episode?
Hard Cases.
Hard Cases, that's right. And we listened to it on the radio last night, and there are some great moments. Melinda, you shared the first bit that we're going to look at tonight, and this is from the opening scene. And I have a thing for opening scenes. I love them. I think the opening scenes in The Wire are like their own movie.
Yes.
I just think they're great. So why don't you introduce this clip, and then we'll go from there, and we'll listen to it, and then we'll talk about it. Make sense?
Yes. Well, the beginning of the episode, since this week is audio week, if you just turn out the screen and just listen to it, you hear all the sounds of the harbor. You hear the birds. You hear the water, the equipment. And then it goes to Frank and Nick talking. And you get from the scene that actually you can kind of see the relationship, the dysfunctional relationship between Frank and his son Ziggy, and how his angel child Ziggy is being corrupted by Nick. And you just kind of sit there with your jaw dropped open, saying, yelling at the screen, saying, there's no way. Ziggy's in his own territory here. And so this beginning opening scene just made me scream at the TV. Yeah.
Ziggy is certainly in his own territory.
Yes.
Ziggy is a nutball. Although he has a beautiful jacket.
Okay. Yes, $2,000 for it.
That's awesome. So let's listen to this clip and then we'll talk about it. This is Baca and Nick on the waterfront, so to speak.
Good anchorage, good cranes, good railroads, close to I-95, a lot of people ready to work, right? That's my fucking town. Except the thing is, we're another 110 miles for any ship coming up from Hampton Roads, an extra day. So why come, right? Why come unless you know your cargo's gonna move fast and clean through the port? Why offload in Baltimore except that a Baltimore gang will turn your ship around faster than any other port, and a Baltimore gang will make sure your cargo, all your cargo, gets where it needs to go faster than anywhere else.
Like you guys never stole nothing back in the day.
We ain't back in the day, Nicky. When's the last time you saw trucks backed up for 3 miles outside Patapsco Terminal? If it wasn't for the car ships, we'd be starving. The cameras come back. I'm serious. They come back today, we tell the shipper we lost a can in the stacks.
They're gone. We turned them over already.
To who? You know the Dasco line's a cunt hair away from taking their business down in Norfolk? I don't need this shit right now.
I do, Uncle Frank. I need the money.
God damn it! You ain't hearing me!
What, you think this shit is easy, huh? You think it's fucking easy? You try living on 5 or 6 days a month, see how fast it puts you on your ass. I am on my ass, Uncle Frank.
You need money, you come to me.
Oh, yeah, Frankie Sabaka's father fucking Christmas on the docks lately. No doubt his pockets are full, huh?
You think it's from me? Is that what you think, huh? It ain't about me, Nick!
Yeah, no, I'm sorry.
Hey, you got Ziggy mixed up in this? Jesus, Nick, the fuck are you thinking? Me and Ziggy are gonna talk on this long and hard. Let's go to work.
And that's where that scene, at least that's where I end.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was struck by it when I was listening to it. Just one of the things that struck me about Sabaka, and I love Sabaka, I say that all the time, but I really do, is not only the relationship he has to Nick, but the relationship not only has to his son, but to his sense of, do you think this is about me, right? The idea that we're seeing Jimmy McNulty reincarnated, right? When Jimmy McNulty was all about him in season one. In some ways, Sabaka's pretending that he is doing it for everybody else. But this whole thing started over a stupid pissing war about a stained glass window in a church, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it is a little bit about him. I don't know.
Yes, because it has not been about just being the good person. Because in like the previous episode when he said, you think I don't have daughters, you don't think I have a wife, when he was talking about the girls in the container, but yet he's willing to still turn a shoulder and let business keep rolling.
Yeah, he doesn't actually stop it. You're right. That's a good point.
Yeah. So he tries to play as if he is the moral good guy, but it's still a thing of pride and money when it boils down to it that he's not going to give it up.
Yeah. And it's interesting when he talks about me and Ziggy are going to talk long and hard about this. And the question is, we see him and Ziggy later on in future episodes, even in this episode, their interaction. And it's not really that. They do have a talk at some point in the next episode or two. But it's not, you know, there is something strained there. And there's something really, you know, the generational relationships and the disconnect between Sabaka and his son is an interesting one to follow.
Yes.
Yeah.
He has more of a father-son relationship with Nick than he does with Ziggy.
Yeah. And Ziggy, I mean, what do you all make of Ziggy? Just as a comment to throw out there, what do you make of Ziggy?
I think he needs to go pick up Bubbles and Johnny and go ride around.
I just think he's a petulant child. He doesn't really know what's going on. And all he cares about is himself and making money, but he doesn't think about consequences.
Yeah. There's that scene, and I think it's in a future episode, episode 5 maybe, where he burns a $100 bill at the bar. And that's just a great kind of, it really encapsulates Ziggy, right? Like his complete disregard. It's all about play and not caring and puts himself in these precarious situations and expects everyone else to bail him out. And he really is. He's a petulant child. I think that's a great way to describe him. It really is. Yeah. What else? Anything else about that scene? How about the audio?
The references that he talks about how if you need a job done, they're the harbor to come to.
Yeah.
They've got location. They've got, you know, all the equipment. They've got the people. They are the business to come to if you need something done. But it's like he's not really talking to Nick. It's like he's talking almost like an advertisement for himself. Maybe even to talk himself into it.
Yeah. And he's talking about the last remnants of you know, a port that's basically in decline. And it's interesting how he starts, like you said, and he's talking about Hampton Bays and how, like, you know, is it Hampton Bays or what is it? It's not Hampton Bays.
Hampton Roads.
Hampton Roads down in Virginia, of all places, that just an hour away. And it's just this kind of almost a small little mini history of the decline of Baltimore, right? Without the car business or without this one shipper, they'd be dead, right? They'd have no work. But Nick is doing it because he doesn't have any work, right? 5 days, he's lost all his identity. He's lost all his income, all his sense of pride. Like, Sabaka at least was there when there was a port to be worked, right?
Yeah.
There isn't anymore. It's gone. It's interesting. Anything else about that first clip?
I think that's about it, other than just screaming when he said, you know, how does Nick always get Ziggy into these predicaments? He's just absolutely clueless.
You think this is about me? I love that sign. You think this is about me? Classic Sabaka. Now look, yeah. we're gonna play. Hey, Lakeisha, you made it. How you doing?
You left the task, but I'm here.
That's awesome. Well, that's good because we have a few of these. So you tested out. Now we know how to do it. We get it. What do you think of Ziggy, Lakeisha? Let me ask you.
Ziggy. He's a character.
Yeah, he's a character, right?
Definitely a character. But I think he gets himself in enough trouble.
Yeah, he does. He's a nutball.
He doesn't need any help.
He doesn't need any help. So let's take a look. This next clip before we talk about is going to be Daniel's dog, and this is Maggie. And Maggie might be listening on Twitter. So if she is and she can't get on, she can comment on Twitter and we could go. I know John Brazelton is listening. Jonathan Brazelton is listening on Twitter, and he said Ziggy's a complete lunatic, which I love. So if you have comments on Twitter, just hashtag him DS106Radio or Wire106, and we'll bring him in. This is actually a bumper that was made by Sid, the kid, and she's on the call right now, so let's listen to her bumper. Love it.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. It's an expressionistic DS106 bumper. Wub, 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 deal. One, oh, yeah. Isn't that awesome? Anyway, I think it's great. And Meredith Fierro's out there in the audience listening. Hey, Meredith. So we got a couple of Wire 106s on the wire, so that's great. So this next clip is one that Maggie wanted to talk about. It's Daniel's dogs. And this is interesting. This is that scene where Daniel's is in his living room watching an agility dog show. You ever see those agility dogs? I actually went to an agility dog race the other day, and it was basically a dog that was going through loops and hopping over things. It's almost like a horse race thing, but for dogs, and it's interesting. So anyway, Daniels is sitting there in his kind of posh living room watching an agility dog race. So here it is, DS106 Radio, only on DS106 Radio, agility dog races. And that's it. He turns off the TV and he moves on. And I don't know if Maggie will chime in, but did anyone hear the audio was a little bit low. Did anyone hear what she was saying? Talking about
the actual show.
Yeah, the actual behind what the woman with the British accent was saying.
I just heard like the names of the dogs, and like she was basically just commenting on the race.
Yeah, and that any dog could do it. That was the other thing, like even a house dog. And as Maggie mentions on Twitter, the dog show talks about loyalty and obedience, right? And it's interesting because she's noting, and I think absolutely right on, that's what Daniel struggles with, is his sense of loyalty and obedience, right? Loyalty to the upper brass, maybe, or obedience to someone like Burrell. And so it's interesting that he's watching this dog show. And if you notice in the sound very subtly, and I'd be interested what Maggie says, you hear the announcer with the British accent talking about any dog, even a house dog, would become a great agility dog. But there's this actual bark that's reminiscent of the bark you hear on the other side of town, right? Like, remember that Jennifer Ralston was talking about the baby's crying and the dog's barking. And there's interesting that within that you hear a very similar bark. And I'm wondering if that's maybe also like embedded within this high culture notion of the dog, right? Rather than a thing of trespassing and of potential, you know, this potential dangerous space, the dog is embedded within this kind of cultured idea. You still have this sense of danger, whatever. But I was listening closely this time and I heard it and I was wondering maybe if Maggie had anything to say, she could tweet that. But anything else about that dog, that little dog moment? Interesting moment to pick out because it's very subtle in terms of the sound. Okay. So
it almost seems like incongruous, you know, like, I don't know. It's hard to picture, you know, Daniels watching a dog show. it's not what I would expect from him, I guess.
Yeah, and it's interesting. And he's so, if you look at him, I mean, the dog show is really just in the background, very subtle. He's deep in thought, right? I mean, he's getting sucked back into the department. He was talking about becoming a lawyer, leaving this crap behind. And it's interesting how he's in this moment, right? Almost like he's back in the race too, right? He's getting back into, he's getting sucked back in. And the idea of this dog, right? The relationship, it's like the end of Kafka's The Trial, right? Like a dog, all of us. So it's interesting that it would be framed through the dog context. All right, so we're going to listen to the digital camera one in a second. But before we do, I think Amy Wallace, I think this is Amy Wallace's DS-106 radio bumper. And I love the bumpers, so I'll play them all night. Ready? Here we go.
You kept one for yourself, did you?
Yeah, them Japs, they make a nice little camera, they do.
You even got any film in that bitch?
No, it's digital.
Yeah, I know it's digital, so what?
So no film, look. There's a computer chip inside. Take that off, you load the pictures on the computer.
Thanks, Dolo. Hey, Zig. I'm Ziggy.
Okay. That was the one that you wanted to talk about, Sid, I think, about the camera and digital. What was up with that one?
Yes, I did. I hope you can hear me because my internet keeps cutting in and out.
We can hear you perfect.
Okay. I chose that clip because I thought it was really interesting. There were lots of different sound effects in it that I would have never thought to like put in. Like when Nick puts the shot glass, you can hear it clinking, and then when he gets up to go to the bathroom, you can hear everything that's going on. And then also I liked the excitement of how, like, I liked how excited he got when he figured out that he could use the digital camera. Like, it just shows the contrast between, like, things that you can use, the technology now and the technology in the show.
Yeah, and you can actually hear the technology too, right? So you could hear it when he's playing the bumper. I mean, when he's hitting the camera on and turning it off at the end, when he says, "Hey Zig, don't spend any money," you can actually hear it. It's subtle, but you can hear him turn down the camera or turn off the camera. I really like that too.
Yeah.
In fact, I was tripped out by the idea of the digital, right? Like, Nick, this is a digital storytelling class, right? We are kind of trying to interrogate a little bit this question of the digital. And it's interesting how Nick really has no concept of what digital is. And that's not necessarily a knock on Nick, right? Like, he's like, "Hey, it's a digital camera." He's like, "I know it's digital. Does it have any film?" Right? Like, there's a complete lack of understanding in 2003. And this is kind of around, maybe a few years earlier, but around when digital cameras break big, when everyone starts getting one. I don't think I got my first digital camera in 2003, 2004, that you really start to wrap your head around a culture of the digital. And so this is an interesting moment where that comes up in this episode or in this scene even.
It also shows the difference between the two characters, that how Ziggy is up to date on the times. He's on the computer, he's doing things, and Nick wouldn't even be able to even figure out how to get on Google if he had to. I mean, there's a world of difference between what the two of them are capable of doing and as far as what they can do to get in trouble with.
Yeah, I think
that also goes back to today, you know, when there's the younger generation that knows how to do all these things with technology and older people don't. You know, it's sort of the same thing. Even a couple of years makes a difference when so much technology is changing in so little time, like it was at that point in this show.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also interesting too, just how much the technology is an ongoing theme in this in this season, right? The technology, how it's changed the notion of the docks, the idea of the containers. In previous in episodes coming forward, just how much technology changed the way they track the information, how much information is left. It's interesting that technology plays a crucial role in just thinking about the broader cultural changes you're seeing not only on the docks but throughout the show, right? We saw the pager, we saw the cell, we saw the payphone. We're now seeing the digital camera introduced as a new world. In an episode or two, we'll see Nick trying to figure out the internet and how to search on the internet. So it's an interesting season about technology. There's a lot going on there.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. Anything else? All right, let's go to the next one. So we have the camera. We also have the episode where Kima and Daniels are telling their significant others about the fact that they're going back in the police force. And I think you wanted to share this one, Allison, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to introduce this one?
Yeah, I just thought it was really interesting that no words were said at all, but you get, it's very paralleled. So Daniels and Kima sit there and they just have blank faces, while their significant others are also paralleled on the other side of the kitchen table. And they sort of almost have the same movements. Like they puff and they puff and then they throw down their silverware and then at the end they just get up. And so it struck me as how similar it was, but also how you could completely tell the tone and what was happening by just listening.
Yeah.
Because no one said anything.
That's a good one. So let's listen to this and then we'll come back and talk about it. Here we go. That's the end of that scene. One of the things that struck me right away was the sound was consistent between them, right? Like mm-hmm. the music was going between their two apartments, but it's as if they were in the same place.
And yeah, I wonder they're if going that... through the same thing. I just thought the music was so perfect over top. It was very like poignant, but also tongue-in-cheek because, you know, they're trying to have this nice dinner, but like clearly they are not enjoying it and things are not going well.
Yeah, and it actually circles. Like, the music is circular, just like the visual shot, which you don't...
It's like they're sitting at the same table, almost.
Yeah. And there was a reference in the previous episode that when they decided to go back, I think Kima said, you tell my partner, I'll tell yours, or something.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting how it was playing on that, visually, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Maggie brought up on Twitter that this is a harder scene to fully see unless you see it visually. Like, it works even better when you have the actual visuals, because you get that circling.
But again, it's amazing that, like, Simon can put it together with just the audio of their movements coupled with the music and then just the facial expressions, which really tell the story as well.
Yeah.
So, and also the cutting of the plate, like, you can hear the anger that the spouses were having with how they were cutting food, you know. You hear the knife.
Yeah, and dropping it. Yeah, you can hear it through the utensils, right? That's awesome. Yeah, it's a great scene. What else?
Someone mentioned about all the music that was in the episode while we were watching it on Twitter last night, and there's something really different about the music in that scene. You know, like you don't hear that kind of classical stuff anyplace else. It sort of tells you that, you know, their respective wives there are really of a different world, I think.
Yeah. And that sense of culture, you know, when we go to the bar in near the port, we actually hear the old kind of 60s and 70s rock and roll, and mm-hmm. it's a whole different, like, you know, window into the culture through the music, and it's fascinating. So if anyone has their stuff playing out, it's kind of circling in so we can hear it. So if you could put on headphones and mute that'd be great. So the other thing to think about, just generally about sound in this episode, is I don't know if you heard it, but Melinda's clip, you had Sabaka, right? And there was Sabaka, yeah. And he was taking this deep breath, right? Like he was like this like deep breath sigh when he was talking about he'll deal with it with his son, right? And he was trying to basically trying to catch his breath. And it's interesting what happens at the end with he's basically Bunk and Freeman are in the bar. And they're basically calling him on the murders. And he freaks out. He goes to the bathroom, and that's the kind of final scene. And it's interesting what happens then. So we'll listen to that one, just because it really was a parallel with the very beginning, when he was catching his breath after what was happening with Nick and Ziggy. But before we do, Jonathan notes that it's interesting that a particular classical piece seemed to convey a lot of tension in the air. The piece itself was twirling with the camera, the actual music, but also was very tense, like the activity happening and the clinking, right? It was as if there was another instrument. Yeah, it's kind of interestingly done. So let's take a look or listen, to the ending of episode 4, which doesn't have any text. It's just Sabaka. And you do miss a huge part of the scene by not seeing the picture he looks at the very end. But even then, let's just listen to this is when he goes in the bathroom at the very end. So he's leaving the bar, going into the bathroom. And the ending scene start. But I was struck by this. I was struck by the kind of complete acting of Sabaka and him losing himself in the mirror and trying to pull himself back together, and how similar that was to the very beginning. But and that's also the awesome scene where he sees the picture of the doc that I know, Paul, you have talked about, that Maggie blogged about, which was really just a great kind of moment of this past that they're trying to recapture but it's totally gone.
That staring in the mirror thing, too, it reminded me of Avon in the earlier season, you know, sort of reflecting on a situation there.
Yeah, and it's true.
And like, you don't get on the radio, but...
Yeah, you don't get on the radio, but it's also like, who is he at this point, right? Like, where is Sabaka leading to, right? I mean, the Sabaka's kind of lost in some ways in this, and there's a little bit of a moment for Sabaka as he goes deeper and deeper into this situation he finds himself in, right? And it's like you said at the very beginning, Melinda, I mean, kind of recognizing, I have daughters, I have a wife, you know, I understand what you've gone through, but in the end, right, he's covering up the brutal murder of 14 women, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what this is about, as much as it's about theft, right? Like, he knows. Like, he's complicit.
Yes.
As much as I like him, he's complicit. Anything else about the episode in general? That's all the clips I have. So anyone else have anything else about the episode? Things we didn't mention, you want to bring up, you want to talk about? We have about 6 or 7 minutes before we start the 9 o'clock tweet along for the final episode. So if you haven't done that, tonight's the final night to do it this week. So you're going to listen and tweet along. So that's coming up next. Top of the hour. But before then, anyone have a last kind of reflection on episode 4? of season
well,
two.
Well, I think not just episode four, but since I watched the audio conversation with Jennifer and did the tweet along the other night, I really noticed them paying more and more attention to audio. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's really cool, like especially the music in the episodes I pay attention to and try to figure out what is it for. And then you can just hear such a difference between the dock crime scenes and the street, you know, when you're in West Baltimore. It's just so different, and I really hear it now, and it's cool.
I had the same impression after the interview. Can you guys hear me?
Absolutely. Uh-huh.
Yes.
I had the same impression as you did after listening to Jennifer's interview. You pay more attention to all of the sounds, the music. I think they stay true to the audience by always making sure the music that they sample or choose is it correlates with whatever environment they're in or whatever culture they're dealing with. Like I remember last night they had Mary J. Blige playing when Stringer went over to see D'Angelo's girlfriend.
That's right.
You know, and that's something that African Americans would be listening to, especially when maybe intimate moment. And then just the bar, the music that's playing in the bar, kind of just goes with the environment. Some of the choices that they choose, but I cannot get the theme song out of my head for nothing. It is driving me crazy because I really feel like there's a whole message in that song, and I thought about it all night last night, and now what I'm thinking is that it correlates with the red and blue that we keep seeing throughout scene after scene. This red and blue, it's almost like walking with good and evil, and I can't really put my finger on it, but there is a connection with all of the red and blue, all of the evil that's going on, and even the wives that are trying to pull their spouses out of those arenas, out of that dog-eat-dog world, and the whole, you know, if you listen to the lyrics of the theme song, it's telling them, you know, walk with Jesus, you know, keep the devil in his hole, and all of these characters are having a hard time keeping the devil, are keeping Satan in the hole.
Well, it's interesting. I love the theme song, and I think there's a lot of people who have done some awesome analysis about that theme song. But mm-hmm. you'll notice, like, it's a different version for episode two, right?
Yeah.
It's a different editing of sequences,
yes.
And there's going to be another version of it for episode for season three, for season four, and so the kind of transformation of that theme song, because you're right, like way down in the hole. I'm singing that to my kids all the time. I'm like, what are you talking about? I can't stop saying it. I'm like always saying, way down in the hole.
Right. I know we thought we liked season one's version, but my husband was listening to season two's last night, and he was like, I like the whole jazz blue sound of it. It sounds so, you know, the person that's singing it makes it sound so passionate, you know.
It's very bluesy, and it's sounds like it's Tom Waits, but I don't think it's Tom Waits.
Yeah, it's Tom Waits.
It is Tom
Waits.
It's
his song.
It is his song.
The first season was the Blind Boys of Alabama.
Ah.
The cover of it.
And he sang it in the second season, so this is him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great song. And it really does get at so many of the themes. And an analysis just of not only the song, but the song as it relates to scenes from different episodes would be a really interesting kind of close analysis of it. I agree. I think it's awesome. One of the
things I think it's intentional.
I do too. I think it's all intentional, right? All the pieces matter.
Yeah. Well, I had one thing that I looked up is we have seen in the last few episodes the Greek walking around with beads.
Yeah.
And his hands. And you know, there's been some mention about a vagrant, a mention of a priest, and plus the theme song is talking about good and evil, and so I had wondered if they were rosary beads, but after doing a lot of research on it, it appears that Greeks carry worry beads in their pocket, and worry beads are used to pass time, and there's different ways that you can move them. And they have different meanings according to if you move them quietly or loudly. And they also could be a mark of power if they are expensive beads. If they are really elegant beads, it's like sporting a Rolex. You know, you you know, it says something about you. And they're also used to guard against bad luck. And so we see these beads every now and then, and I was just kind of wondering, I'm like, okay, is he a priest, or what's the deal with the beads? So I looked them up last night.
That is awesome. And they're called worry beads.
Worry beads, uh-huh.
I think I need a couple of those.
A necklace to go with it, too.
Exactly. That's awesome.
Yeah, the idea of a status symbol is interesting, too, because the Greek is kind of like the top dog in this whole thing here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he looks like he could switch places with Bubbles.
Yeah, it's yes, true.
And the beads look like they are elegant because they're not like cheap crystal, or they're not, they're really, they're metal, they're high quality.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting. The whole worry beads thing is interesting. And the whole different, we've talked about it before, but the whole different frame for culture now, where we come in with the Greek and his right-hand man and Boris, and or who was Sergei, who they call Boris, and you know, we'll start to see where do they link into the whole kind of broader you know, subculture of crime that's happening around Baltimore. It's interesting to start seeing how the pieces connect, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that's coming in. It's 9 o'clock. We're going to have a live tweeting session going on any second. I'm sure there are people who are tuned in already who are hearing the last of this. So I'd like to, any last wrap-up points before we go, or should we call this a session and get ready?
I just wanted to ask a question about the ending of episode 4.
Absolutely. Yeah, go for it. You're muted. You're muted.
I thought Avon was setting up the whole tainted heroin to help D'Angelo.
Yeah. Potentially.
Like, isn't he cutting himself a deal?
He is. He ultimately does cut himself a deal in this one, right? And he basically cuts himself a deal and is turning his back, or, you know, D'Angelo is turning his back on Avon. And Avon eventually lets him go. But, you know, Avon was smart, you know. He did that. He knew he could be the informant, and he shaved a lot of time off of his time, mm-hmm. right? Like, so he's down to 12 months, and then he's up for parole.
Yeah, right.
And it's crazy. It's crazy.
And that attorney is a mess.
Yeah, that attorney's awesome, right? Oh, I love him.
Yeah.
Awesome's one way to say it, I guess. Okay, so we're gonna actually finish up here with this. But before we do, I got one more DS106 radio bumper that was actually just created by Jessica Reingold, and thanks to the beauty of Twitter, I could find it. So let's listen to this, and then we'll go. So Jessica Reingold, this is your DS106 bumper. Here we go.
DS106 radio.
Very electronica. I'm going to do it again.
DS106 radio.
Oh, I can't get enough of the bumpers, I have to say. Like, any like bumper, like, I don't know, how are you guys finding the audio assignments this week? Are you guys finding fun? How's Audacity going?
Time consuming.
Yes, it is.
You're trying to figure out the right combination to say what you want to say just using audio.
Yeah, it's not easy. All right.
And with listening to Jennifer's interview, you pay more attention to making it sound realistic. Like, I did somebody coming home from work, and, you know, every sound that you hear when you're coming home and you're getting out the car, door opening to the trip of the alarm is walking away. I mean, you have to consider all those sounds.
Yeah. It really is compelling to try and create a soundscape. And I think the sound effects story is a fun one. I love that one. It's a fun sign. Okay. But I think we're cutting into the time of the other group. So we're going to say goodnight. You guys all have to say on three, DS106 Radio for Life. This really is usually hard. So you have to do it when I say three, DS106 Radio for Life. If you mess it up, we have to do it again, which could be bad. Okay. So on three, one, two, three. DS106 Radio.
DS106 Radio.
You guys were terrible. That was terrible. Let's do it again. On three. One, two, three. DS106.
DS106.
You guys were awful. That was terrible. It's almost
That's you.
I know it was me. It's almost impossible to do this on Google Hangouts. I just like to abuse people with this. Anyway, I'll give everyone a good laugh. All right, thanks everybody for being part of the conversation, and
bye.
We'll see you soon. Bye bye, everybody. Enjoy the listen along. Bye bye.
Live tweeting time.
Live tweeting time is right. Okay. I will turn this off so we are ready to go. And